Hello and welcome everyone to the Habs World Podcast. I'm your host, Norm Sarek. I have with me my usual trio of co-hosts. First up is Paul McLeod. Paul, how are you?
Oh, wonderful, Norm. Glad to be talking Habs with you guys, even though it's the offseason. Can't wait for the draft and hopefully what follows after that.
Yeah. Interesting and exciting times. Next up is Sean Kayouet. How are you, Sean?
Great. Looking forward to a week from now. It's like Christmas for me. Love the draft.
For sure. And next up is Jonathan Rebello. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm fantastic. I hope that the Sean's Christmas is spoiled and Kent Hughes trades away some presents for something more tangible.
Okay. I think we're going to go in that direction topic-wise. So before we get going, of course, like I always have to mention that we're recording this evening of June 17th, and this is episode number 123. Paul, you have some trivia.
I do. So only three players popped up in my search for trivia about the Canadians, but on further research, found a couple of interesting tidbits. Anyway, Claude Lorose played for the Canadians from 62 to 75. In 529 games, he scored 117 goals, 123 assists for a total of 240 points with 540 penalty minutes. One of our former favorites, Sergei Kostitsyn, between 2007 and 2010 in 155 games, managed 123 penalty minutes. And lastly, some of you might remember Igor Ulanov, a rather large defenseman who played 123 games for the Canadians from 1997 to 2000, 4 goals, 15 assists, 19 points, and 197 penalty minutes. But the interesting thing about Ulanov is he was a part of a rather interesting trade by the Canadians. And when I say interesting, I mean awful. Does anybody remember that?
No.
No, but I do know that he wore number 55 and eventually played for the Edmonton Oilers.
He did. So the trade was, try not to cry, January 15th, 1998, the Canadians, during Uhl's reign of error, traded Stephane Richer, Darcy Tucker, and David Wilkie to the Tampa Bay Lightning for the notable Patrick Poulin, Igor Ulanov, and Mick Fecoda.
Good trade.
Later on, Ulanov was one of two players, along with draft picks, acquired from the Rangers when the Panthers traded Pavel Bure to the Rangers in 2002. And that is the trade tree around our 123 trivia.
Okay.
You said Claude Lorose was the first trade?
Yeah, Claude Lorose. Yeah.
He's from Hearst, Ontario, in the arena, and Hearst is the Claude Lorose arena. So that's the same hometown as Claude Giroux.
Love when Sean brings up his hometown, Hearst, Ontario. always great to hear a little bit of Hearst. I thought we would dive a little bit. Speaking of Igor Ulanov and the Edmonton Oilers, we are recording this also on the eve of Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals. And what better way to lead into the draft than to talk about the two teams that all the other 30 teams would trade places with right now. And when I look at this, when I look at these two teams and the players that are thriving for the most part, you know, there's so much physical engagement. They didn't always have to be the biggest guys because, you know, look at Brad Marchand, what he's doing, his slight size. But it's got to be, you got to have dogs out there, dogs that want to be in the fight, aren't afraid of the physicality, aren't afraid of bending the rules, jumping face-offs, doing every little thing to win. And I think that that's not only what Hughes and Gorton are going to be looking at in the draft and for any players they acquire this summer, but I'm sure all the GMs are, you know, looking for that same level of tenacity with being able to skate, defend, and score. I just to share a couple of thoughts on what I've thought of the final so far. Both teams, obviously excellent, but the thing you notice the most is almost all the goals are being scored by some type of traffic in front of the net, driving the net. You know, there's the rushes, of course, but that's going to be the guys the Canadians are going to have to go after. And on the back end, defensemen getting pucks through. The Panthers have, I don't even know how many goals their D have, but their ability to get the pucks through is invaluable. So that's what I'm looking forward to this summer for the Canadians, to be acquiring some potential guys like these 40 guys in the Cup Finals.
Yeah, the one thing I noticed, I mean, I think each team might have one smaller defenseman, you know, like Nate Schmidt. I don't even know if he's that small in Florida. And then forget what's his name in Edmonton. But Yeah, I mean, it's you got to build from the net out, I find. And not that Edmonton did that. They just kind of lucked into two generational players. But they did hard work to get those type of defensemen. And you can tell it makes a big difference. They're making it hard on everyone.
That's a great point, too. Yeah, lots of big D.
Well, I think that's why, if I remember correctly, Kent Hughes was actually quoted as saying that's why they didn't draft Lane Hudson's brother, Cole, simply because they didn't think they could afford to have two defensemen that size on the back end.
Oh.
Which leads me to think that somebody like William Trudeau potentially will be a trade chip sooner rather than later, because he's a pretty good prospect, but I don't see a spot for him in our D-core anytime soon. That could change, though. Looking at the Panthers and the Oilers, it strikes me that the model the Canadians want to follow, because Edmonton's model is lucking into two generational players, is that they would want to model their approach around that of the Panthers, obviously. And, you know, being bigger and tougher never hurt a team's chances in the playoffs. So I can see that Hughes and Gorton are trying to build a big, fast, you know, heavier team with a couple of skill guys like Cole and Lane. And as long as they're insulated, that shouldn't be a big problem. I mean, Brad Marchand isn't that big, but he doesn't seem to have any problem with the tough going. He doesn't seem to have any trouble scoring goals in the playoffs. So
he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I don't get into Hall of Fame debates. I don't. What I used to think of the Hall of Fame criteria doesn't really apply anymore. So
yeah, the Hall of Fame is there's definitely some biases based on whoever's happens to be on the committee, I think now, more so than before. Yeah,
me too. And I'm kind of old and curmudgeonly and feel it's watered down. So we'll best leave that from discussion for another pod.
But I mean, but Marchand, when he does retire, I think he stands a good chance of getting in, like a very good chance, I will say.
Absolutely. That. Well, because it's a hockey Hall of Fame, right? And all the stuff he's done for Canada as well.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Olympics and World Championships.
Did he go to the Memorial Cup? That was a long time ago. Forget.
I'm not sure about that.
Oh, wow.
I don't think so. I
can't remember.
You're right about type of player, too, because, I mean, you put Marchand next to Patrick Laine, there's no, you know, the size difference is enormous, but, I mean, who's the toughest player? Who would run through a wall for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
No doubt.
And I think we're going to see this draft is going to be an interesting one, because it's going to be a good test for this management team to put together something to beef things up a little bit, but also get some players with some, you know, like Jonathan says, some dog mentality.
There's some players like that in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
Are going to be available for the Habs. So
potentially. Yeah. So with that, let's see. Let's dive into more of the draft topics. So as I shared with you guys, I had an interview with Kevin Levalier just the other night and recorded that. And I'll play that now. I am happy to introduce Kevin Levalier, a draft expert at Habs World. Kevin and I and Brian LaRose have worked together for the last few years on many different draft profile articles and mock drafts. And I am very pleased to introduce him today and bring him in board for part of the Habs World podcast. So how are you doing today, Kevin?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much, Norm. And thanks for having me on the podcast once again. I always enjoy doing this podcast with you. And the guys too. So
great, happy to have you again. This is turning out to be an interesting season. So let's get started, shall we?
Yeah.
I'd like to know what your general impressions are for this 2025 draft coming up.
Well, the general outlook on the draft is that it's a weaker draft. I think one of the things that's really interesting around it, though, is that the experts around the draft have gone out of their way to really highlight what a weak draft means this year. So there's been a lot of critics of the depth of the draft, but they're also sending out a lot of warnings that what does that really mean, right? Like one of the experts was saying, like a weak draft will produce 7 to 9 impact NHLers, whereas like a strong draft will create, like it'll produce 10 to 12. So you're seeing that range isn't as big as, you know, people are like, oh, just throw away the picks because it's a weak draft. It's not quite that drastic in terms of change. And so I think heading into it, knowing that it's a weaker draft, having that kind of mindset is key sometimes for fans not to overreact with some of the stuff that's said about it. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yep, I agree. That does make a lot of sense. So let's dive into some more Habs-centric questions. My first up, of course, is going to center on who you think the Habs will target for their first two round picks.
A little bit of tongue twister there. Yeah. With two picks back to back and in the middle of the round, it's pretty interesting because the range, if you will, is kind of big, right? At 16 and 17 is players that can slip, stuff like that. However, if you kind of listen to what's going on around, there's a lot of noise around Carter Bear, Lyndon Lakovich, Kayshon Aitchison, Cameron Reed. One of the names that's around that area that I'm a little bit surprised at the lack of noise is around Justin Carboneau. I'd be really interested to know that this new, I don't know how new they are now, but the regime with Gordon and Hughes has been kind of known for throwing up smoke screens. So I'm kind of interested to see if maybe the fact that there is no noise around Carboneau is just that, right? Like it makes it, they might be really interested. Yeah. Who I think they're going to target, myself would probably target Lakovich and Aitchison. So forward D kind of pairing. I'm a little bit concerned at the noise around Reed, not in the player itself, just I don't really see the fit with the team. But some outside noise too around Braden Coutts and Logan Hensler, but I don't know if they'll reach back and go that far.
Okay. Yeah, I like some of the picks that you mentioned. And let's see. Well, Bear is one that I wrote up a draft profile article on recently that I published last week. And the other one that you also mentioned, Carboneau, is one that I'm pretty keen on. And I wrote an article up for that. And I think that's going to be coming up in the next day or two. So, yeah, it should be intriguing to see how that fleshes out. So go ahead.
I'm just really kind of interested about Carter Bear. I think he had a profile that was really interesting to me, but in a lot of the stuff that you read and that you see, one of the key points in his game is how he can push the pace. And now he's going to be coming off an Achilles injury. So that's kind of my big question mark around him. But I mean, if he does recover, then he's certainly an interesting pick for sure.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's the recovery from that type of injury. It's not uncommon, so he stands a good chance that he can rebound from that. So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Let's see. So moving on, my next question was about the rumors around some potential trades, because we have seen that in the last couple of drafts that the Hugo have been involved in. So what do you think could happen if they trade those picks? Like, who are you predicting Montreal might get in return?
This is kind of a tough one because there's been a lot of noise about, and again, coming back to the initial point about it being a weaker draft, there's a lot of noise about a couple of the picks that are ahead of the Habs that are also up for sale. And so I'm thinking if they do trade those picks, I think if they're going to get a lot less for them than some of the Habs fans are hoping for. My hopes for a trade really kind of faded when Mathieu Darche, the new GM for the Islanders, came out and said there's going to be no rebuild on the island, which is kind of, I really was hoping that Montreal could pull something off for Horvat, even if it meant overpaying, but yes, that won't happen. There seems to be a lot of sellers for picks. I mentioned before, a couple of the picks before in Columbus and Philly. There's also a couple teams that you'd kind of think would be starting to go into a rebuild. I just named the Islanders. Boston would be another one, and yet they're not going down, or they don't appear to be going down that road. So there's not a whole lot of teams looking for futures, which is what the Habs are basically trying to sell, right? There is one. I'm gonna throw my hat in the ring on one trade that I think might be of interest. It's more of a Doc-like project. Maybe they trade one of those picks with 41. And it's been reported that Tampa Bay might be looking to move off of Isaac Howard and that they weren't able to get that done in terms of signing, and maybe Montreal sniffs around there and sees if that's a possibility.
Ah, okay. I do remember reading a rumor regarding that player too. So he could be an interesting prospect.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question I had was regarding other Habs prospects from the Hughes-Gorton regime, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about some of them and when we may see them play pro.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that question because that's like wide net at this point after a couple of years, right? So I started with a couple of players that were already playing, well, pro, though not in Montreal. So I'm really interested to see if Reinbacher starts the year in Montreal or if they're going to slow play it and start him in Laval. I'm assuming training camp will kind of take care of that. The second one, which is probably my favorite out of this list, because if you remember a couple of years ago, I had picked this player in our mock draft for the Habs, and they ended up picking him, I believe, in the third round, and they just signed him, and it's Vincent Rohrer.
Mm, yep.
So I was excited to hear of his signing. It's really cool that Mark Crawford spoke so highly of him playing over in Switzerland last year, and now to see if he's going to be able to come make his mark. If I'm not mistaken, he's penciled in to play in Laval next year, so that'll be really interesting to see what he can bring to the table. Another one would be Michael Hage. I think that's one that a lot of fans follow. For myself, I was very much in favor of his return to the NCAA. I think he can use a year where there's a little bit more pressure on him and the team to produce and to see how he fares under that circumstance. And then I'll be really interested once he gets to Laval, I'm kind of guessing in a year from now, or a little bit more than a year from now, if he actually sticks to center or if they see him being more of a winger moving forward.
Yeah,
because he's got a lot of offensive tools, but as we saw with Doc, that doesn't always translate to being able to play the full 200-foot center game when it gets to the NHL level. So,
right.
And then I picked one that was kind of off the board a little bit, and they picked him last year. And it's Owen Protz, big punishing defender. And I'm going to be really interested to see what they do with this player because he really represents like a need in the organization. And we saw that earlier in the spring when the Habs signed Tyler Thorpe, even though there wasn't a ton of pressure to sign that player, but they wanted the size and they're trying to develop these players with a lot of size. And I think that with Trudeau and Engstrom, Protz also represents an organizational need in Laval too, so it'll be interesting to see if they're able to bring Weatherspoon back, if kind of Weatherspoon could take him under his wing and really get him to flourish, and he could become an interesting piece more as a project than the long-term piece.
Hmm. Okay, interesting thoughts. I'm in agreement there. I like Rohrer as a prospect. He performed really well at the World Championships this last spring. Been pretty keen on him, so it was. I thought he might be another year away before signing, so I was pretty pleased to read that announcement recently. And yeah, very, very keen on Hage as well. I share your concerns there too regarding whether he's ultimately going to become a center when he turns pro, or if he's going to be a winger. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But it could go either way, and he could still be, even if he isn't a center, which is a huge organizational need, he could still become a very useful winger, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Protz is another one. He's more of a throwback type of player. You got to like that. And he does fit a certain organizational need too. Agree with that. So yeah, some good prospects you picked there. Thanks. So I'm going to move on to my next question. And this is kind of a fun one. I think you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Because we think we have all heard this one. But for those who haven't on social media, this did leak out at some point. And it was a question that allegedly the Habs were asking prospects at the NHL Combine this year, which is, if you were stranded in the desert with someone with only a bottle of water, a baseball bat, and you can't share the water, and the other person takes the water first, what do you do with the bat?
I have, before I even get to my answer, I have to say my favorite one that I heard was hit a home run.
yeah. I like that one.
I don't remember which prospect said it, but I laughed when I heard it.
Yeah, I don't recall either, but yeah, that was a fun response.
As for my answer, I think I kind of agree in a certain sense that I would probably take the swing with the bat too. I mean, the question doesn't give out, like, is the other person an ally, someone you know, anything like that? So if it's not someone I know and it doesn't identify the other person, too bad, my water. And as a question that being asked at a hockey combine, you know, you kind of have to have that mentality of my water / that's my puck. So.
Right. Yeah. This question sounded like it came from the sports psychologist in the organization, didn't it?
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, the only other thing I could think of that I would add if I were a prospect in that situation is just see how far you can intimidate this person with a bat as you tap it across the across your hands, or there's some ways you could put a little influence into that. I don't know. It's just fun. I thought it was a fun question there.
Yeah.
Better than some of the boring ones that we hear about at the combine. Okay. So my next question circles back to recent events regarding CHL players moving on to the NCAA. So Caden Lindstrom is one of those in particular. It's kind of a high profile one, but there's been a few others too who have started their careers in the CHL and then before they graduate the junior level, decide to jump over to college. I wanted to know what your thoughts were.
I think as a first year of it happening, I think it's a good thing, but it has the potential of becoming a bad one. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain it. So right now what we're seeing are young players might basically identify and evaluate what's the right path for me. Hey, I'm not sure I'm going to make it. Let's go get some schooling out of it. Great. Good for you. You know, stuff like that. And I think the fact that that becomes an option puts a lot of pressure on CHL teams to ensure that they have a strong program, that they're taking care of the kids, and maybe have a better follow-up on some of the educational promises that are made at the major junior level. And that, you know, once that those kids get out of there, then there's 57, you know, caveats to it. And then, oh, that's not covered or stuff like that. So think that they'll be under pressure now to make sure that they're following through on those promises. Otherwise, the program will get a reputation and the kids won't want to go there. And if they're drafted there, then they'll take off and go to NCAA. So I think for that aspect of it, I think it's a good thing to put that kind of pressure on CHL teams. However, I do believe that the NHL, with the new CBA that should come out sometime this summer, probably going to have to adapt their signing practices to reflect this new reality. Right? Because right now, you know, a young player that is drafted out of the CHL has 2 years to find their entry level. So that's a clear-cut disadvantage for the CHL. So if I'm a player and that's that's potentially, I don't know if I'm going to be signed, maybe I go to NCAA because then it gives me 2 more years potentially where I can prove myself and have the team go, no, we want to keep you around and sign me to a pro contract. So if the two leagues can remain in a parity situation with that, then it can remain a good thing. If the NHL doesn't tackle this, then we potentially face a situation where NCAA kind of becomes the way, and then that'll be hurtful to the CHL teams long term.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, and especially that last point, because that's my worry bead, is that it could go in that direction too. So I'm going to move on to the next question. And I guess this is for the people who have like to spend some money on their betting apps. The Habs have 12 picks in this year's draft. And so the question was, how many selections do they end up making? Is it going to be over or under 10 and a half?
So I went under.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they'll be able, like when they get to the later rounds, they'll probably try to move some picks for some, you know, an equivalent pick in the next draft or something like that, just to kind of spread out their ability to sign some youth and some talent down the road. I don't think they're going to move, like, if they won't be far off from the 10. I think they end up picking 8 or 9. I won't be lower than that, just because like I said earlier, there's a lot of teams that are apparently looking to move picks, and there's not as many looking to acquire them as usual, but once we get into the later rounds, they'll probably be able to move a couple.
Okay. Okay. So let's see. My next question was, and since you mentioned some of these, I'll skip the first name. So among the prospects, McQueen, Lakovich, and Carboneau, who do you value the highest?
Well, I think the top one has to be McQueen. There's a higher ceiling there. There are health concerns, but I think the Habs are now at a point where they've got a ton of depth in that prospect pool. They have a couple high ceiling picks, but they need to continue swinging for that home run and try to fill out that top of the roster. So McQueen is a boom or bust, but if it's boom, then they'll look like geniuses for doing it.
Yeah. Okay.
Second one on my list was Lakovich. I'm a little bit, you know, worried about the Mantha syndrome, where he's big, but he doesn't use it quite enough, but he still has quite a bit of a good abilities and fairly decent ceiling. Carbonneau's the lowest ceiling, but it's probably the one with the highest floor. You know, like he's more NHL ready, I guess, would be the easiest way to explain it. But he might have a bit of a lower ceiling. But if I'm picking McQueen first out of Habs should be hitting for swinging for home runs, then to come back to that question, right? Hitting, swinging for home runs. And then, yeah, so maybe that's why I'd have Carbonneau at the bottom, even though I still think he's a pretty darn good prospect in my eyes.
Okay. So now let's see. My next question is, in a perfect world, who's the Habs 2C second center going to be next season? And then who do you think is their realistic choice for 2C is going to be?
Yeah, those are two very different questions.
Yeah.
Who's the in the perfect world? Like, I think I mentioned it before. Horvat was the one that I was really hoping that they were able to make a move on. Hmm. That was my dream one. I think he would have been a perfect fit with Doc on one side and Demidov on the other. But apparently it's not going to happen. I do wonder if they don't take a run at Matt Duchene on a very short-term deal.
Okay.
I think that might be an interesting one. Because quite frankly, I don't see what I want. Like, if I put myself in Hugo's shoes, I don't see what I want on the rumored trade market. So if they have other stuff that's going on that's not in the rumors, then maybe. But what's in the rumors right now, I'm not super interested personally. If they can't pull anything out, then I guess Doc gets another chance. And if we end up entering the mix for the McKenna, well, then so be it. And that could be a real painful way to solve that issue, but one that could really pay off long term. So,
okay, good. Let's see. And then my last question is, who is your late round, by late being third round or later, target that the Habs should be all over?
That's another interesting one, because depending, the lists are kind of all over the map this year. Mm-hmm. So I think the first name I'll pull out, I would not be surprised if he ends up going before the third round, so maybe more in the second round. And it's Mason West he played a couple games with Fargo Force of the USHL to end the year.
Yep.
Yeah, he's quite the wild card, and I think there's a couple concerns because he still intends to play his high school football season as a quarterback. Hmm. Before coming back to hockey, which is what he's done. That's what he did this season anyways. And he did say that he was committed to developing as a hockey prospect, but if he had this out of this world season as a quarterback and all of a sudden he starts garnering interest on that side of things, what happened then, right? Hmm. But he's a big boy. I think he's 6'6", if my memory serves me correctly. And he's got a lot of raw talent. And a lot of the scouts believe that once he's done with football and he's like really focused 12 months out of the year on hockey, that there might be some significant growth there and he might be a good late pick.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. A couple other ones that I kind of highlighted quickly. I saw Theodore Hultqvist. He's playing over in the SHL. He's a 6'2" right shot D who's said to be a strong passer and good under pressure. The knock on him seems to be needing to use his size better, but that's, something that might come naturally when playing on a smaller ice too. So that's an interesting one. And then up front, there's Arvid Drott, who's playing for Djurgårdens, also in the SHL. Hmm. So he's a right winger, plays with pace and intensity, and he scores mostly by being somewhere near the blue paint. So I thought that was something that the Habs could certainly use. So that would be a name to maybe have a nose out for.
Okay. Great. I like that list. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I'd like to thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Oh, thanks for having me. I always enjoy doing this. So
let's see. Kevin had some interesting picks for those first round picks. Man, I got that butchered in the first one too. So Carter Bearer was one in particular that I really like. And I wrote a prospect profile article up for him in the Habs World website last week. And when you talk about players with bite or dog-like mentality, I think he's totally got it. He's got that package, but he also has a pretty high skill level as well. there were some concerns that Kevin brought up regarding that player, regarding that Achilles tendon injury that he had. But when I did some research into that, I don't think it's a career-ending type of a situation, but it's certainly one to have concern for. So we'll see. Maybe he might be the type of player that drops to Montreal, and if he does, then you know I'd be happy if they dropped him.
I think he's the type of player you can use a second-round pick to move up to get with your 16th overall pick and one of the seconds, because you have two. I think with Gallagher retiring soon, this is the guy that's going to take over that role, just the in-your-face, just tenacious, more skilled and a bit bigger too. So that's kind of scary for other teams to think about, to have this guy in your face all the time. But an incredible player to watch whenever I've seen him.
No fear of the Achilles injury, Sean?
It's not even a full tear. It's partial. Like he was saying he could have gone to the U18 or one of the showcase showdowns or something this summer. So I don't know if that's going to hold up. But no, I mean, not in 2025, not as much. And he's already a much better skater than Gallagher. Gallagher's an atrocious skater, right? So, and he was able to carve out a career.
I think, was it Peyton Krebs that had a more severe Achilles injury and then yes. did drop a little bit to the Golden Knights? So hopefully Bear will go down a little bit and maybe we'll be able to nab him. Or like you said, package a pick and move up. That would be excellent. I would be very happy with that as well.
He wouldn't need to be dropping that much. Bob McKenzie's got him going at 15, which is just one pick higher than...
I'd rather trade up and get him than just miss out on him by one spot. You know?
Yeah. We have, like we've talked about this before, the Canadians have an abundance of picks, and there's no possible way they have room for even a quarter of all the prospects that they have and that they're going to have. So to move up and get the quality player you want, absolutely do it.
Yeah, the Canadians have 12 picks. Kevin bet the under on 10.5, which is where I set the line at for him in the questions. I hope the Habs only make like 8 picks. I'd love for them to be wheeling and dealing a lot on this draft because, yeah, the cupboard is essentially full and there's only 50 contracts, right? So
great jersey to have, too. Imagine the gay community getting a Bear Habs jersey. Big community in Montreal. This is going to be great. I love a Bear jersey.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. And not, don't even give him a number to wear on the back, just a bear's claw as his digits.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I like that. Let's see. How about some of the other players he mentioned? I'm trying to remember. Lakovic, I believe, was one of them.
I mean, I have a feeling that they're going to target Lakovic because he's just this 6'4 and skilled. They want to get bigger. My concern when I've seen him is he does not play big. At all. Yep. He doesn't really cut to the inside to go to the slot and attack. I don't know if that's because of the team he was on. He was on an atrocious Moose Jaw team. So he was kind of asked to do everything. So I think he was essentially playing the point on the power play too, like one of the high guys. But it scares me. 4 penalty minutes when you're 6'4" in a WHL. I mean, to me, that's a red flag. And I saw something recently that he's seeing a sports psychologist about it. Like he's mention that, yes, my competitiveness is an issue that I know of and I'm trying to get help for it. And that's just like, it's great that you're trying to get help for it. But I mean, why isn't it a switch? You know, to me, a hockey player, it's a switch. When you're on the ice, you just become an animal. That's the type of player I want. Not someone.
Yeah, especially in Montreal. I love the player from, you know, his reading his bio. You know, you read his bio and you fall in love.
He's great. When you see him, he's really skilled.
Yeah, and yes, he's obviously an incredible talent. But if you're going to be a big guy like that and not play that way in Montreal, you can't really have many off nights, right? Because, you know, the media would be all over him. And obviously that wouldn't be next year. He's going to be going back to the WHL next year, and maybe he can figure out something with a sports psychologist. And who knows, maybe he answered that question from the Canadians with the baseball bat like a lunatic, and maybe that'll inspire them to make that pick. But yeah, I do understand the fears around drafting a player of that size that seemingly does nothing physically.
Yeah. I've heard some commentators use the dreaded S word to describe him. Soft. Which, you know, there's nothing worse than a soft, skilled big guy. They really piss me off. So I would, you know, maybe if they think they can work with him and they draft him, you know, I won't prejudge him until I see what happens on the ice. I mean, Marty's done some pretty interesting things to transform players in ways that we wouldn't have imagined, like making Josh Anderson one of the premier penalty killers in the NHL. It's not something that I envisioned, for example.
I just don't know if he was like a late growth spurt. So maybe he's like awkward to his body or so. Like, I'm not sure, because 6'4" at that age, you never know. Might've been like Beckett Seneca, who was just kind of figuring out his body and didn't really break out. So I don't know if it's something to do with that. But to me, if I'm 6'4" and I'm playing against 5'10", 16-year-olds, like, I'm just obliterating them, right? I'm going to the net. You know, so
yeah, so he remains a bit of a controversial type of pick. So I don't know. It'll be hard to say if they go in that direction. Then let's see. What's some of the other ones? I think Justin Carbonneau. Yeah, no relation to Guy, but still an interesting prospect too. And I've written up an article on him. I'm pretty keen on him. I kind of like him as a potential pick, but he's definitely got a lot of high skill, skating, shooting, even passing. You know, there's really nothing bad there. Defensive game is just so-so, but, you know, that sort of stuff can still be coached. It's not too late for that. What did you guys think?
I saw a very skilled player, but when I watched him, I don't know, he kind of teeter on the edge. Is it low IQ or what? Because it seemed that he tried to do everything himself. So instead of doing the smart play, he would try to deke around three players. So it's like, why? You know, is it just because you want it so bad? I mean, sometimes the smart play is the right play. A lot of times the smart play is the right play. Or are you just low IQ and you don't know what, you know, the only thing you're doing is looking down and you can dangle. I don't know. But again, these guys at 16, 17 are all going to have warts. So you just have the, like, he's got the size and the skill, like you said, and the skating. So, I mean, why not?
Yeah, I the question would be for me is that we obviously don't have access to is at the combine, you got to point blank ask him, you know, you're from Quebec. Do you want the pressure of being drafted by the Montreal Canadiens? Be honest with us. You know, we don't want to cause you any grief. This is 2025 now. You got to have conversations with these players on, you know, their mental state and whether that's something they're prepared to do. So, and, you know, you'd hope the player wouldn't lie to you saying, you know, I want to be drafted by any team. Like they tell the media, you'd want them to say, you know, be point blank with me. Do you want the pressure of being a first round draft pick by the Montreal Canadiens? It doesn't really matter if you're first overall or 26th overall. There's a certain amount of pressure that comes back, that comes with that. And it's compounded by being French Canadian, right? So if he said in that interview, I want to be a Montreal Canadian, I want the pressure, I'd be all over this kid. And that basically would be where my decision process would be. Pivoting now to Paul, or Paul, did you want to weigh in on Carbonneau there at all?
Yeah, I just really like the player from what I've seen. I haven't seen him play, but everything I read about him and everything I hear about him makes me like him. But I think you raise a good point, Jonathan. I've heard, like, Denoyer, for example, has said that he would love to play in Montreal. I haven't heard that coming from Carbonneau, but he may have said it, and I just didn't hear it. Yeah, I any of the guys we've discussed, with the possible exception of Lakovic, I kind of like.
Here's what I'll say on those two picks. And I know that Kevin did bring this guy up as well. But if for whatever reason the Canadians make both those two picks, which I hope they don't, and I do understand there's a glut of teams looking to move down or sell futures, if they make both those picks, I use one of them on that Mason West kid. I know it's a huge reach. I know that all the teams are going to start thinking about him in the second round, but a 6'6" monster that potentially could be, you know, a college quarterback. This guy's obviously got intelligence. He can obviously move if he's 6'6", and, you know, potentially there's the worry that he could get some collegiate offers for football. And if every team's looking at him in the second round and you have two first round lottery tickets, I'd use one of them on this Mason West kid if they make both the picks. It'll shock the crowd and shock some other teams. But that's my thought on that. What do you guys think?
Shock me.
The conversation with him would be, are you committed to hockey? That would be the first question. Like,
well, he's said that he's committed to hockey. I'm sure that that's the case, unless he gets a top 20 college football offer.
I don't know. I could see the Canadians potentially maybe trading up after those first picks to get I'd be surprised if they took him 16 or 17. That would seems like a bit too much of a reach for me. I was just looking at Corey Pronman has projected that the Canadians will pick Bear at 16 and Lakovic at 17. So for once, I hope he's right.
As for Wes John, I saw his mock, and yeah, I would love that too, even though I'm not a massive fan of Lakovic, but I think at that point you could roll the dice. For what John is saying, I think it's a bit high for Wes. You know who's going to get him is probably Columbus at 20 because of you know who, Trevor Timmons. He's a Minnesota high school kid, 6'6", athlete, Adonis. He is creaming his pants right now to take him, guaranteed.
Just to spend some time in the weight room with him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I just don't see it happening. I it gives me too bad of a taste in my mouth. A Minnesota high school kid. There's been, I worked out with McDonough somewhat. You know, that was a good player. We had David Fisher and all the others in the later
McDonough
rounds.
Was a great pick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. When it comes to West, I don't know. I it's sure on size, of course. It's pretty intriguing, but, and I was just looking something up about him. He has received multiple football scholarships from Division I schools. So, yeah, you know, that's the question.
He's not going to go to one of those schools though. If he's not going to get a potential starting job, he's not going to go and be QB3 at one of these schools. If he has a potential to be an NHL star, I don't think he's going to go back up at college. I think the only way he goes the college football route is if he's, you know, essentially going to be a walk-on starter or a second-year starter. He's not going to go redshirt.
But I don't think we can chastise Lakovic for being small, but, you know, ignore that this guy doesn't bleed hockey. Because he obviously doesn't bleed hockey, because if he got the main football offer, he would say, piss off, I'm going play football. So I wouldn't want to play like that person.
To play angel's advocate to that, Sean, I think sometimes that's the mental state that you need to be able to have to thrive in Montreal somewhat. You either need to be, you know, all in crazy or have that ability to disconnect like he would, which maybe that would suit him well, not being, you know, in a hockey obsessed guy in Montreal.
Anders Lee, I think, of the Islanders was a two sport athlete.
That's the comparable that Friedman talked about on his podcast there. So I wouldn't mind having an Anders Lee on my team, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's fair enough. In West's case, too, I don't know. I mean, he's just a very, very raw talent. I'm not sure if he's first-round pick worthy. I mean, if I was one at the bottom of the draft, if I was a team at the bottom of the draft and you were saying you would gamble on it, like a Tampa Bay would gamble on this guy, no question. But
or Philly, Philly has three picks in the first round, including probably the last pick overall.
Yeah, that's another good example. Pick.
And just to go back to Pronman for a second, he actually has West going 34th.
Okay. Well, yeah. Some of the guides have him a lot lower. So
he's all over the place.
Yeah, so it's tough to say. Whereas there's other players that if you really want to size a big forward, you could go with a Jack Nesbitt or you could go with Horkoff. I mean, there are other guys that are 6'4", 6'5", out there. It's just, and who are in more established leagues. So it's a little bit harder to see a first rounder for him. If I'm the Habs, that is.
Speaking of size, do you think there's any chance McQueen drops all the way to 16?
Yeah, there certainly is, I'd say. Yeah, that injury has definitely gotten people a little scared, and especially after what happened with Kane Lindstrom the year before in his draft, a little different situation, but also a backs issue. In his case, he's claiming that at this year's combine that everything's fine with the back. And I think he participated in some of the activities too, if I'm not mistaken.
And he's another monster too, 6'5".
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's why I brought him up. We were talking about, you know, the larger size of the draft.
Oh, for sure.
Go ahead, John.
I think with McQueen's size and skill, despite the back injuries, I don't think he makes it past 10. I think he'll be picked in the top 10. I'd love if he fell to the Canadiens. And I think of all the players we discussed, he'd be my 1A choice that we've discussed so far. But he's not getting out of the top 10, in my opinion.
Okay. That's fine. And you never know. Maybe there's going to be some sort of rabbit pulled out of the hat involving those two picks and a big move up to pick somebody like him or one of the other top 10 picks. It's hard to say in this draft, that's for sure.
Kevin felt that Darche being hired by the Islanders was bad for the Canadiens. with the potential for a rebuild. Sean, I know you were kind of thinking that that was the better choice if it was between him and Bergevin for the likelihood of the Islanders unloading some veterans for going for the future. Do you still feel that way now?
No, because he flat out said so. You know, I felt because, I mean, if you have two candidates, you would think that they would have opposite, you know, directions that they want to go. So that's what you're debating. But I guess they have two candidates that thought the same thing, right? Because I don't think Bergevin would rebuild. Or at least you don't want to hire him to rebuild. So I guess it's probably not happening. They probably think that they could get Matthew Schaefer to come in with Noah Dobson already there and just have a legit defense and, I don't know, flounder, because they don't really have anything. They don't have anything beyond that. It's an old team with no prospect pool. So I don't know what they're doing. They could really rebuild and create something special, but yeah, it's usually up to ownership, right?
For sure.
They want to fill those seats in the new arena because they paid a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody's enamored with the new Washington model of retooling on the fly, right?
Easy to do when you have the best goal scorer of all time.
That's true.
The Islanders don't have one of those, eh?
Unless they still have Anders Lee. We like him. Another player that was mentioned was Aitchison. I know John really likes him.
Oh, yeah.
Sean.
Yeah, I got to watch him play a couple playoff games this year against the Frontenacs. And I don't ever think I can be the best judge of defenseman talent. At a young age, I find that very challenging for me to be able to predict future success. But what I can tell you is he is a very physically engaged player. He drives the other team absolutely nuts. He skates the 200 feet of the ice very well, creates great offense, great first pass, fights, sticks up for his teammates, tries to get his teammates going. Well, I'd be thrilled if he was a Montreal Canadian. Yeah, defensemen take longer to develop, but if they make those two picks and he's one of them, I'd be thrilled with Kashawn Aitchison for sure.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I like Aitchison as well. He definitely has a lot of bite to his game. He kind of reminds me of a young Jacob Trouba, except with a better offense.
Whoa. That would be good.
I just worry about his skating. I find he has heavy feet. I don't know if you can do that in the NHL. I think he'll be successful. I just question his true upside. I certainly love everything about him other than the skating. Okay. The leadership and the intangibles and stuff, and he's hard as nails. But I think you can find guys like that in the later round, like the Habs did with Owen Protz, you know. Obviously, Kachison's better offensively, but like if you want a guy that can hit and stuff, I think you can find that later. What about Bill? Have you read about Bill Zonin?
No, I know nothing about him, Sean.
He's a winger for Hawaii Naranda, the Huskies. And he's his parents are immigrants from Togo, and they came to Quebec. And he turned on the TV, saw PK Subban, and that's what inspired him to be a hockey player.
Oh.
Big Subban fan. So it's a really cool story. So he's slated to go late in the first, but I thought it was an interesting story in rooting for him. Because, I mean, how often do you have someone of Togo descent, Togan. I don't know even know what it is, the nomenclature. Good, you know, cool story.
Very cool. How old was he when he came to Canada? Like, when did he start playing hockey?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it was late.
Amazing. Yeah. Anybody that's a big PK Subban fan, I think he'd be thrilled to play for the Canadians. Then that's a guy that would definitely embrace the spotlight for sure. If you have an affinity for a player like that, I'm sure in some way you would match the personality as well. So very cool. Don't know anything about him, but I'll certainly do some reading now.
Yeah.
Great name too. Zonin.
Cronin has him projected to go to the Sharks 30th overall. Bill Zonin.
Oh, wow. So he's a top rated prospect. I've read nothing about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob McKenzie's got him 34.
I've read just a little on him. Yeah, he's definitely projected to go somewhere in the bottom half of the first round is from most picks I'm seeing. So, yeah, he's an intriguing prospect too. It'd be interesting to see if they decided on him. He's got decent size, not super bulky yet, but I mean, you know, he's 17, 18, so it's fine. There's still time for that development. I'm not concerned.
6'2" frame. He's a lot bigger than PK Subban, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And if you want to feel old, another guy that's rated for probably the first round is Vernon Fiddler's son, Blake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you really want to feel old, it's like him and Logan Hensler, the two American big righties that are, you know, that people are kind of wondering who will go first. Because I think Fiddler played in the WHL and Hensler went to college early. So Hensler was actually rated like top five at the beginning of the year, maybe even last year when they were doing, you know, the preliminary rankings and kind of dropped down because his offense didn't catch up. But, you know, there's some tap potential with both of them. That's for sure. But it just makes me feel old.
I'm a big fan of drafting genealogy. So yeah, I'm all in for drafting sons of players. Yeah. For every time it doesn't work out, it's the ones that do work out seem to be spectacular. So all in.
Hmm.
Vernon Fiddler's the one that made that face to BX that made Vigneault piss himself, right? Left.
Yeah. Like, oh. doing the big tough guy skate for sure. Yes.
So I didn't know that.
Humor too. I'm sure his son shares the sense of humor too. So nothing wrong with having guys like that in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And if he's a first round pick, I'm sure he's a lot better player than his dad ever was.
Fiddler's not exactly a small player either. 6'4", 290, or 209, yeah. Sorry. 6'4", 209. So.
Yeah, right D as well.
And the last name I'll mention is, he said it at the Combine, but Radim Mertka, who is a big right-handed defenseman from the Czech Republic. Apparently the Habs are the ones that are most interested in him throughout the year. But he's slated to go probably top 12. So they were scouting him when they thought, you know, when they were one of the worst teams in the league and thought they had a shot at him, and then they just started winning all of a sudden. So they're out of that. So I don't know if it's, I would hate for them to trade up to, well, I wouldn't hate for them to trade up, but like use two firsts to trade up to get a defenseman that you don't know their true upside, especially a righty when you have, you know, Ryan Backer, Mayu. It's not a massive need, but I thought it was interesting that they followed him so closely. So they're clearly interested in right D, which makes me think, I don't know, is one available for trade.
Yeah, there's something to that, I think. Yeah, another big, like, pro size heavy player, plays heavy. Not sure about his offense. He doesn't seem to have a lot, but he's not terrible. He just seems to be that kind of guy who would probably slot in perfectly as a number 3-4 guy and possibly a shutdown role, because he's got a lot of potential to become a super solid NHL player.
Kevin brought up the idea of exploring Isaac Howard from Tampa Bay, who can't come to a contract agreement with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it seems like he'll probably be on the move at some point this summer, probably right around draft time or free agency. What are your guys' thoughts on pursuing a player like that, you know, doesn't seem to fit into whatever Tampa's doing?
Yeah, I'll go first. I mean, he's on the smaller side at 5'11". 190 is not a bad weight, though, to be carrying that. He's had two good seasons. His second one was very, well, he's point of game his first season, exactly, and then 52 points in 37 games in the second, so really stepped it up. Yeah, he was pretty highly touted, if I remember correctly, I think he was pretty good. Oh, did he? Okay. Pretty good wheels on the kid, too, from what I remember. So, yeah, he's got high potential, which kind of makes me wonder, why is he considering not signing with Tampa then? That's really odd. They could
something
use
about
the depth.
Playing time. He wants some type of guarantee in his contract about playing time, giving me Rutger McGroarty vibes from from Winnipeg there.
Okay. That's too bad if that's the reason, because, you know, I don't like hearing that kind of selfishness level for a non-NHL level player already before they've signed a contract. That's kind of rough.
I don't think we need a 5'11 winger, a young one. I don't even know where he fits. Every winger spot's taken on the team except for Armia's old spot. So I don't think you're convincing him with the fourth line winger role. And yeah. If you really want a 5'11 winger, just sign Nikolai Ehlers for free. I know he's a 70 point player, so I'd rather just sign him and give him his contract. And if you're really going that route instead of
and finally
gambling.
Had a good playoff this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Finally showed up in the playoffs this year for the first time.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree with Sean.
That's fair. It's just, I think Kevin brought it up because it is, well, it's out there that he's going to be available. So maybe that's puts Tampa in a situation where they can wheel and deal. Somebody would be interested, though, I'm sure, to pick up a former first round pick who still has high value. I just don't think the Habs are going to be in that boat for this situation.
And the way that Kevin went about it, I think it's like that, what Gorton brought up in his press conference a while ago, where he's like, you know, sometimes centers just are not available, and maybe the way to go about it is to get a play driving winger, right? To make your line better. So, you know, maybe there, because word on the street is that everyone's looking to upgrade at center. So it's going to be tough to, unless that's why I was thinking, you know, like people are talking about trading the 2015 picks. I think you might have to offer the 2026 pick, the Gavin McKenna draft, a pick from there to entice a team. Because, I mean, you're just competing with everyone. So
Yeah, certainly some risk in that kind of a move, but I get what you're saying.
Well, you'd have to lottery protect it for sure. That's a guarantee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully Canadians aren't in that spot next year, but you'd have to lottery protect it for any chance at McKenna. That'd be poof.
Suck.
yeah, for sure. Now, let's see. So one of you guys brought up the question about the that the Habs allegedly asked at the combine about the being stranded in the desert with only a bottle of water, baseball bat, and all of that. What were your thoughts on that? Since I can't remember which one of you guys came up with that one.
I thought it was a ridiculous question. I wonder who they asked it to and if they asked it to all the players. I much preferred the Suzuki at the casino one at 3 o'clock in the morning that they were asked. If they saw Suzuki at 3 o'clock in the morning, would they tell management? Obviously, they'd have to rat themselves out that they were themselves at the casino. But I did think the baseball bat in the desert was a crazy question. And if you wouldn't kill the person for the water, then you have no will to live, I guess. Is that the thing they're trying to see, which players had a will to live?
Maybe thinking outside the box, you know, I don't know, break a cactus and take water from that. I don't know. I think they're just waiting for reactions.
Yeah, like I'm curious for both of those questions what they would consider the right answer to be.
There is no right answer. That's the point.
Yeah.
Well, okay. What is the better answer? Like the Suzuki question of the casino, like the good teammate doesn't rat out his teammates, but the good company man would tell management, right? So which way do you go?
Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky.
As far as the water, you know, I guess you could say try to, you know, bash a cactus or take the bat and go kill fish. But the more obvious answer is use the bat to extract the water.
Right? The Suzuki one might be to test their knowledge of the team too, because it's obvious. To me, it's obvious you just say, well, he's never missed a game in his career and you can't question his effort. So if they come out with that knowing, oh, they know about our captain, they know about his career.
Yeah, you
know, that shows a vested interest in the Canadians. Maybe that's the way I look at it, because I don't think there's a right or wrong answer.
Okay.
I'm sure they must have paid a sports psychologist or some sort of psychologist a lot of money to come up with that question,
though. I think they have one in the meetings, as far as I can tell from the videos, and I don't think he's...
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a full-time employee of the Habs. I think he's an actual psychologist.
No, probably a consultant. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe you're right.
I mean, that's tough. I mean, interviews are awkward now at the age of 40. When you're 17, it's, you know.
Yeah,
maybe it's just to make sure the kids are awake in the interviews. Ask them some weird questions.
Yeah, it could be something like that.
Because I'm sure a lot of these players are meeting with 10, 15, 20 teams. They probably get boring being asked the same question. So maybe that's why they ask it, just so something different.
Okay. So let's see. There was the question to Kevin about the other Habs prospects from the Hugo regime and when we might see them play pro. And I'll start this one off with the, since it ties in with the recent signing of Vincent Rohrer, player I'm kind of keen on, and I think some of you guys may not, but I like feisty players. He is a little undersized, of course, but he did have an excellent world championship showing, especially against Team Canada. So I think might be one of these players that kind of surprise you. I'm not saying he's going to step into a lineup right away. He's obviously ticketed for AHL, but, you know, give him a couple of seasons and see what happens.
You talk about Vincent Rohrer, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very speedy, but I just tough to see a player that weight making the league. So I don't know. I don't have my hopes up, but I think it's a similar contract to Kapanen, right? Where he's just like, if he doesn't make the NHL, he goes back to Europe.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's what I heard.
Oh, so he's not going to stay in Laval.
I'm not sure if it's like Kapanen, then great. You know, but I kind of thought it, if they announced that they were signing him, I thought maybe it was a little more permanent. So I don't have the details on that one.
Yeah, I like Rohrer. I think he has potential to be, you know, a third or fourth liner for us in the future, given his speed and some offensive upside. But another player that I just heard is coming to development camp, which I can't say I'm keen on him because I don't know enough about him, but I'd like to see what he does at the camp, which is Bogdan, and I'll probably get this wrong, Konyushukov.
The Russian.
He's a Russian player who's still, I think, under contract in the KHL, but he is coming to development camp this summer in Montreal, so it'd be nice to see him and see what he can do.
The Russian Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah, he's a slightly smaller defenseman, though, too, I think. Is he not, Sean?
He's 5'11". He was the captain of his team not this past season, but the year before in the KHL.
Yeah.
And then they gave it to someone else last year. I don't know if they change every year, but he has some upside. I think they drafted him as an overager as well.
Yes.
He's 22.
22, yeah.
So, I mean, it would be great if, you know, he could have got out of his contract because they do have a spot open on the bottom pairing for a right D, right? So, you know, he could have challenged with Mayu and Reinbacher. And it's always good to have a healthy competition like that.
Yeah, that's true about the competition, but I'm pretty sure I've read that he has one more year left on his contract over in the KHL. But it's great that he's going to be attending because at least the Habs get a closer look at him and see how he compares against prospects in around his own age.
Well, one of my Omayu or Reinbacher better be on the team to start the year next year. That'd be quite a shame if both those guys start the year in the AHL.
Yeah, I agree, Jonathan. To be honest, I'm thinking that unless Mayu, assuming he doesn't get traded this offseason, I think it's going to go to Mayu to start, and they'll see how he fares in this upcoming season. I know he didn't have a great start last year, and what he got about 6 or 7 games in before he was sent down and wasn't called back. But hopefully he's had more time and more coaching to work on the defensive side because he does have good size, good offensive skills. It's just the other side of the ice that we need to be concerned about.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview, TSN 690 today, with I think it was Marco D'Amico, and he was saying that unless it's to bring back a young, bona fide number two center, the Canadians should not be considering trading Mayu because right shot D with his combination of size, speed, and offensive ability and meanness are not very often available.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he's still got time to develop, so I wouldn't be in a rush to trade him unless they're getting something really good back.
Fair enough.
On the note of Canadians defensemen, Norm, have you any change in your thought process on how you think the Lane Hudson situation is going to unfold after July the 1st? Obviously, congratulations, Lane, on winning the Calder Trophy. As we all predicted, it was an absolute landslide runaway. It was a no-doubter. There was a couple crazy people that voted for Celebrini, whose vote should be immediately revoked in perpetuity for that disgusting showing of a vote. But Lane, is he gonna extend now that you've heard the Canadians talk about it a little bit? Gordon's or Hughes saying, we're in no rush to sign him. There's no pressure on us. He's not even offer sheet eligible next year. And Lane saying, I'd kind of like to get this done. It is kind of what his message was in the postseason scrum. You think he's going to sign, or you think it's going to be a year?
Okay. I think you misinterpret what I was saying. Of course, I'd love to see him sign as soon as possible, but I was trying to take the stance of the devil's advocate, I guess, in a way, where Hughes, as a negotiator, may not want to step down that road that quickly. That's all I'm saying. But I could be wrong. Maybe both sides are quite willing to start talking about a huge contract extension, and then they'll get it done quickly, and everybody will celebrate.
That's why these college players are tough, because you burn the year off with those. He played 2 games, and so you only have 1 full year to judge him on. But you can have 2, but I mean, if he gets to 75 points next year, all of a sudden that contract goes up by 2-3 million a year. So it's kind of touchy. But if you already had 2 years of seeing what he could bring, then you could better evaluate.
Yeah.
I think Hughes is a former agent and apparently extremely skilled negotiator is not going to let the situation devolve to where he has no leverage. Meaning I think he's going to be signed sooner rather than later, if not before the season, probably mid-season next year before. Because ideally, he's not offer sheets eligible right now. And so there is no pressure on the Canadiens, which is the ideal time for them to actually get the deal done before the leverage starts to shift towards the players' camp.
Okay. Well, and maybe that'll be the approach. We'll see. But I think they're going to take care of the usual things in terms of chronological order, right? I mean, right now it's preparing for the draft, then it'll be the draft, then it'll be the pre-UFA period, and then there'll be the UFA period. And then they start looking at their own RFAs or potential RFAs. So it could still be announced sometime this summer, though. I'll be ecstatic if it happens.
I think it happens before midnight on July 2nd.
Okay, fair enough. Hey, and I should mention, too, there was an impressive stat that was mentioned where there were only, I think it was three other defensemen who've been named Rookie of the Year since the early 50s, I believe. Okay, so let's see if I can get this right. Bobby Orr was one. Quinn Hughes was another. And I'm blanking on who the third person was. He was another Jackson? Hall of Famer.
Oh.
No, he was a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
Shoot, I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was Larry Murphy. It was somebody like that, though. So he's in pretty good company, to say the least.
And then another question that I'm excited to ask for Sean's thoughts on. Apparently, Mike Matheson met with the Canadiens management about a possible contract extension. Mm. And Sean, rather than getting crazy and saying you want him gone and don't want him on the team, at what number would Mike Matheson to you be, you know, an amazing, amazing re-signing? There's got to be a number where obviously it's going to be more than $1 million, but be honest, where would you put that number at? Where, because ideally Mike Matheson is playing what for the Canadiens? 17 to 19 minutes a night, not 24 plus, right? So what dollar amount makes you happy if he was to re-sign?
Are we saying as a player or as the janitor?
A little harsh.
I hope the discussion was we're going to try to find a new home for you, and there wasn't a contract extension.
It could have been.
For real, you really think that? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
I think we're better off without him.
No, I don't think so.
Especially on the left side, you have Gouley and Hudson. You don't need him, and his points halved, and he's. And I don't care if 25 minutes, 17 minutes, he's going to do something stupid every game. It doesn't matter. So, I move on. I trade him for what I can. Right, not like anything. I wouldn't trade him for a seventh round pick. Like he has some value, but I don't know. I don't see any need for him. I don't.
Okay.
Fair. If he signs an extension at like something like $4 million per, because he really wants to be in Montreal, I think he's a great veteran presence. I do think he is prone to making mistakes and having brain farts, but he can do, you know, one of the most challenging things to do in the NHL as a defenseman, and that is move the puck forward. He is, you know, I would say most of his mistakes actually happen at the attacking blue line more than anywhere else, but his breakout typically especially when he's not the last man back or trying to do something crazy as the last man back late in the game, I feel like he, you know, can create offense from the back end, and having a guy like that at $4 million, for example, would be a spectacular steal for the Canadiens for the next 4 or 5 years.
No, see, that's where I draw the line. Like I would, as long as it's like 2 years, maybe three, but you can't start giving him this fucking Yanni Gourde contract and be like, well, why don't you retire in Montreal? We'll give you 8 years as long as it's $2 million. No, get him off. Go away.
You're forgetting that kind of contract would make him highly tradable if the need arose.
Not if people watch him.
Okay.
Paul, Norm, what about you? Some realistic feedback here.
I don't know.
There's got to be a possibility. They got to be talking about it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have met with him.
I'm conflicted. Conflicted because on the one hand, I want to open up some spots for the younger defenseman who I like better. But I believe that doing that right now would weaken the team to the point where they might have a significant regression. And I think Hughes and Gorton don't want that, and we certainly don't want that. But so I don't know. Like, what is he making now? Five and a half? 4.5? I forget what his salary is right now.
Four and a half.
So, you know, if you could wrap him up for 3.5 or 4 on a 2 or 3 year extension, that would be outstanding. But like Sean, I mean, I like the player a lot more. I think Sean's undervaluing his contributions because he does make very blatant errors, but he does make a lot of good plays that aren't as flashy and as exciting as for anyone as when he turns over the puck as the last man back on the offensive blue line, as you noted. But I don't want him up there long term because he will be blocking the path for the younger and potentially better or more suited to playoff winning youngsters.
Okay. I did a quick look up and he's at $4.875 million, and this is his last season. So it's hard to say. It's interesting in a way that they would talk to him in Buffalo during the combine. That's the one thing that puzzled me the most. Isn't he a Montreal native? They could have talked to him at any point in the off season when everybody was basically home. So why would that happen there then? I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. It was definitely confirmed. What's that?
Who doesn't like to spend their summers in Buffalo? Would you like when you're living in Montreal in the summer? Ugh. Like, why not go down to beautiful Buffalo, as they call it?
Okay. Well, maybe Matheson's a huge fan of their chicken wings. I don't know. So that's something that's kind of odd about the situation, that he was definitely spotted there and that they were making this, that it was taking place in Buffalo of all places. So who knows? Maybe they were talking to him saying, look, we're going to be frank with you. We think we are not going to extend you a contract, but we're going to work with you to try and find you another team because we definitely have some teams who are interested in you. But he has a modified no trade clause. So maybe that's why they wanted to discuss that with him.
Could be. I want to go back to the Calder Trophy there, Norm, for a minute. I just looked up the stats. Actually, Aaron Ekblad won it in 2015, and then Makar won it in 2020, and Morris Seider won it in 22.
Oh, so, okay.
Some young defensemen have won it relatively recently, and Quinn Hughes was not one of them.
Okay. Maybe it was based on the number of points at a certain level then, because I read something that was very specific, and there was four defensemen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's definitely.
Not to harp on Matheson too much. No, but I mean, like, you're talking about keeping him because he's a good veteran and stuff. And I get that because look at the worth of David Savard. But David Savard, like, won stuff with his team. Like, Matheson hasn't won a thing. So, the Habs have been tied to Nick Hague from Vegas Golden Knights.
Ah.
He's won a cup. And he was a contributor on a cup team. You know, I'd rather bring him. I know he's still 20. He's only 26. But, I mean, that's still a guy with experience. I'd rather just bring him. He's a left D. I'd rather bring him in his size, his cup experience. And Matheson, like, thanks. But, like, it's just time for us. Like, you're not even on – we don't even want to use you on the power play anymore, right? That's what
– you're saying Nick Hague fits better as your third pair left D than Matheson does because Nick Hague's a lot more physical.
Absolutely.
Nowhere near the offensive upside, but way more valuable come playoff time.
But he still does have upside because he's younger, significantly younger. He's only 24?
26.
Oh, 26.
I just mean the offensive upside that Matheson.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
And like, who would you want with one of the young defenders too? Would you want Mike Matheson with Mayu? That would be an absolute disaster. I would rather Nick Hague with Mayu.
That's a great point.
Okay.
When I first saw that rumor, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Where does he fit? But I wasn't thinking about removing Matheson. While we continue to talk, if somebody that's on a PC can look up what Nick Hague's cap hit is, because I wonder how – I don't think Vegas wants to take on more salary, if you know what I mean.
Oh, no.
Maybe like a straight-up trade for Struble or something, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just spitballing. It's Struble in the pick. Right?
And as we continue to discuss now, we're kind of like pivoting away from prospects and talking more about the Canadiens' future.
He's an RFA. He's not even signed. So.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's why the
and that's why they would be moving them.
Okay, yeah. that makes more sense. Kevin floated the idea of Matt Duchene as the Canadiens' number two center next year. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I don't have any. I don't know. He was terrible in the playoffs. He was absolutely brutal in the playoffs. I don't know if that's the type of center I want between Demidov and Laine. I'd rather just give up. I know he'd be free, and Dallas can't really afford anything. I'd rather give up a couple assets to get William Karlsson, for example, from Vegas, you know, because they need to shed salary. It's just a wild bill. I don't even know if he's available, but I don't know. Duchene already turned us down because he wanted to sing country music and stuff. Well, great. Stay down south.
Yeah, okay. Duchene doesn't excite me. I don't think he – yeah, I feel the same way about his playoff experience. William Karlsson, you know, he's won a Stanley Cup, and but I feel like he's always been insulated. And can Nick Suzuki insulate him so Karlsson can thrive in that number two spot? Maybe. But I would have a lot of questions about Karlsson's ability to thrive in Montreal.
Okay. Well,
I like
is he a lot better than Newhook? That's just your okay.
Better than Newhook, better than Doc, for sure. Yes.
I like the idea of Karlsson as the defensive conscience of a number two line with Demidov and Laine, much better than say Duchene.
Because
Duchene is a good player and has a lot of good attributes, but he is a slow skater and he's not getting any faster because he's getting up there. And you can see, as Sean said, when he got to the playoffs, he was out of gas. So. Not optimal,
right?
But as a short term stopgap. But his how many years has he left on that contract?
He has two, yeah, 5.9.
Okay.
Yeah.
For 2 years, just, it might be okay. I mean, any legitimate number two center is going to be an upgrade. But I'm hoping they can do better. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I'm high on him, Karlsson. That is because. Yeah, I think he would fit in well style-wise. He's definitely the type of player that needs the ice time, and a second-line role would be perfect for him. He's not that old. He's 32. And like you just mentioned, 2 years at that salary is not that bad.
$6 million, yeah. It's not a lot of money, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, and in Vegas' situation, I mean, since they traded for Hurdle, who also plays center, I know he can play the wing too, but I think they like him better at center. That's really dropped Karlsson down in terms of their depth charts, and it's hard to justify paying 5.9 for now them for a veteran center at a third line role. So I would look at that, and maybe the Habs will too. Maybe they'll make some type of deal. Maybe one of those first round picks will be part of it. It's hard to say. And the other thing that I heard about Vegas is that Jack Eichel, who's coming into his last season, wants to renew in Vegas. So they are going to have to find some way to clear out some salary room to make that happen.
Yeah. If the Rangers retain, are you guys open to Zibanejad?
No.
Okay. His contract's far too long.
It is. It's 5 years. Eh?
Yeah, that's the only thing.
And he's 32.
Yeah.
He's a straight up no for me. I don't want anything to do with, well, except for that Will Cooley guy. The Rangers, the way that their top stars played last year down the stretch, I don't want anything to do with the guys on that roster.
Hmm. Okay, that's fair.
He was also expected to be a 1C, though. So it's like maybe he is a second line center, but again, that contract.
He's small. Terrible. He's not tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a no on Mika Zibanejad.
Okay.
Is Marco Rossi too small for you?
Yeah, no. Yes. No Marco Rossi. Don't want him.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah, he's definitely on the small side, but man, I remember that hit he laid out on Slav there in his rookie season, which pretty much knocked him out for the rest of the half of the season. And he doesn't play small.
No, he doesn't, but he's 5'9". So it's,
yeah,
at some point it catches up with you.
How many little guys can you have and be successful?
I
understand that you can have a couple of those guys if they're dogs or if they're superstars, but you can't have a whole bunch of guys. Same with, I didn't even say anything about Vincent Rohrer when you guys were talking about him. You know what? He might end up being a decent NHL player, but if he's a player on the Canadiens, they're never sniffing a cup with having him in the lineup. They're just not.
You know, I really hate this discussion because the problem is not the size of the player. The problem is the wretched, awful, godforsaken state of the refereeing in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Outside of the first couple periods of the first couple games, I haven't thought it was that horrible, to be honest.
Well, the problem is, you know, they seem to change the definition of what a charge is, what a high stick is, what a cross check is. And most of the things that get called in the regular season are just ignored. And that's not just a detriment to smaller players. It's also a detriment to the skilled players like McDavid and Draisaitl, and to a lesser extent to Chuck. But still, you know, if there was more consistency in the refereeing between the regular season and the playoffs, we wouldn't be having this discussion, because size wouldn't be, you wouldn't be as worried about players getting their heads taken off being small by illegal checks, because they would be penalized and suspensions would follow, as they should, but they don't. So yeah,
that's hockey, baby.
No other league in the world changes their rules like this between playoffs and regular season. I don't like it. I hate it.
That's true. There's a lot of things about hockey that are not like any other sport. How many other sports do the officials touch the playing object multiple times a game or contact the players multiple times a game? There's nothing like hockey. And yeah, if I could one complain about the referees is the why are there four of those guys on the ice interfering with players in the offensive zone? To me, that's a way bigger problem than the penalties being called, the picks that they're setting on players during play, and how many times they touch the puck. Put one referee on the ice and put the other three in the penalty box.
Well, the extra referee was supposed to improve the quality of officiating, which it manifestly has not done. So yeah, therefore, wrong. Get rid of it. So one referee, two linesmen, still okay, or one referee, one linesman. And I still think if I was in charge, the first thing I would do is switch the video review stuff to, you know, instead of coaches challenge, it'd be referee asking for assistance, because that's the way they do it in rugby and other sports where it doesn't take half an hour to make a decision. Anyway, yeah. Sorry to derail the discussion, but I think us slagging off on small players, I have no inherent bias against small players, but the way the game is currently officiated, you can't win in the playoffs unless they're, you know, mutants like Marchand or Gallagher, for example.
Yeah.
And I love Caulfield and Hudson, but there's just only so many of those guys you can have in your lineup.
And going back to actually the draft, Norm, you brought up his name very quickly, but I wouldn't be surprised Jack Nesbitt is on the Habs radar at 16 or 17, because he's a 6'4" center. Heavy feet, but I mean, if you accept that playoff hockey is always going to be different, that might be the type of center that you need in your lineup.
Yeah, and from what I read, Nesbitt had a really good playoff. And that's why a guy like him or Horkov, who I brought up earlier too, I think I heard some rumor about the Habs talking to Horkov. So you never know.
Might be I heard they were quite interested in Nesbitt, actually.
Okay.
I mean, look at the difference. Sam Bennett is a 50-point player in the regular season, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And now he's got what, 14 goals in the playoffs, something crazy like that.
How do you spell dog?
Yeah, Bennett.
D-A-W-G, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Sam might not be able to spell George, but he can certainly spell dog. That's for sure. He is quite a player, and he's gonna, if he doesn't re-sign in Florida, I would imagine some team's gonna pay him $10 million a year. They might regret it a little bit in the regular season. They'll regret it if they miss the playoffs, but if they make the playoffs, they certainly won't. That guy is just absolutely out of this world. He knows how to bend every single rule, and you can't beat players like that. It's tough to anyways. So he's good. I don't know who you're going to pick to give the Conn Smythe trophy to if the Florida Panthers win, whether you give it to Bennett or you give it to Marchand, but it'll be a tough choice between the two if they close out Edmonton.
No love for Bobrovsky?
No love for Bob. Not against those two. He'd be number four maybe on my list. Probably if like the Panthers win tonight, I'm probably going Bennett, Marchand, Draisaitl for my top three for Conn Smythe.
Okay. Yeah, I can't argue against that.
Would be funny if Edmonton lost again and they won the Conn Smythe.
Ooh.
Yeah, McDavid didn't even go out and get it last year. Neither would I, though, to be honest. That's, if you'd won the cup before, maybe you go out there and get it. But yeah, if you haven't won it.
If the Oilers lose again, do you think they finally get a goaltender?
A terrible GM, if not. I don't know what Bowman's
watching really Stuart Skinner makes me almost physically ill, and I'm not even really rooting for the Oilers, seriously. I just kind of like them to win. First and last and only time I'll ever say those words.
Great in game fours. He got pulled in the last one, but he didn't lose.
Right. Yeah.
Are they playing him again? Or are they putting Pickard back in? Does anybody know?
Skinner's in.
Made him an announcement yet?
Skinner's in. Yeah.
Oh, he is. Okay. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
And the puck has dropped, but I won't say anything more than that. I know Sean's got it on PVR.
Oh, okay.
One thing I neglected to mention that Kevin brought up was Michael Hage, and I'd like to know your thoughts on this. Do you think the Canadians are still convinced that he's going to be a center at the NHL, or no team can really be sure of that until they reach that stage? Like, is there ever a certainty where you know a guy's 100% going to play center, or is there been way too many guys where you think they're going to play center and they end up getting to the wing in the NHL? And the reason why I ask that is, yes, if Hage can, you know, if he's going to be an NHLer for sure, but if he's going to be a winger, the value for me is significantly less. And he'd be a potential trade chip for me if he's only going to be a winger.
Hmm. Well, let's see. Obviously, his value is a lot higher as a center, but I don't think that if he gets, after he gets turned pro, they shift him to the wing. I don't think it's going to be that bad because he's still a top six player, in my opinion, and he could potentially be better than most of the wingers that they have right now. I'd say most, not all. But yeah, he needs more time. And so I think it's fair that he's going to be spending another year in college, and hopefully he stays injury free and puts up some good points and helps his team to win.
Yeah, I haven't heard any hints or rumors that there's been any consideration of playing him anywhere else but center. So,
yeah, that's why I was confused.
I'd be highly hesitant to trade him. But, you know, like I always say, they can trade almost anybody depending on what the return is, right?
Yeah, anyone's available unless you're Connor McDavid.
If you're trading Hines, right, you want to be getting like a good young number two center with size and upside, and they're pretty hard to get. And those that have them aren't letting them go for a prospect like Hage plus a pick.
Right.
The game's changed so much that, you know, like Gordon said, you know, you can have a play driving winger, right? It could come from the wing. So if he's there, I mean, it's to the point where centers don't even take all the face offs anymore because they're so analytics tell you, oh, you need a guy on a strong side. It was never like that 20 years ago, right? It was just the center took the face off. That was
yeah.
It, right. So I don't know. I don't see enough of him to really make a judgment on that. He does have great speed and great puck handling ability, so maybe they see him as a play driving winger. But I think he can lead a line, not a first line, but I think he's got the skill to lead a line.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I agree there. Maybe it's just where he has some of those similar traits that you still see with successful top six wingers versus centers, where maybe they're a little bit more analytical, a little more playmaker, a little more play driver type thing. Like, you know, I hate to use Nick Suzuki as an example, but he is a really good example because he is a really good center.
Yeah, no, exactly. He does everything well. I don't know if Michael Hage is that. I don't know if he kills penalties in college.
Yeah, but it's hard to tell because I don't know if you guys heard this review of Suzuki, but apparently there was a top scout when he was drafted saying he'd never make the NHL because he wasn't strong enough or durable enough to take the grind of the NHL.
Oh. Wow. No, I never heard that one.
It's a pretty spectacularly wrong take, but, you know.
Yeah. Hey, scouts can be wrong. That's an easy statement to make.
Oh, especially in the draft. I mean, it's so friggin' hard to do. I mean, these kids are so young and it's hard to predict how they're going to develop, and injuries and lack of opportunity in a league that you can't necessarily control. Who knows?
Yeah, right. Let's see. Well, guys, any other topics you wanted to discuss today? I think we covered pretty much all the ones I had.
Sean floated a trade rumor, or not a trade rumor, but a trade thought that either he had or saw regarding Lundell in Florida.
Oh.
And I thought it would be quite a challenging offer to turn down. Do you want to share that with the boys, Sean?
Well, I can't see them trading him unless they resign Bennett and then they're like kind of up against it.
And Marchand.
And yeah, maybe. You never know. It depends on the decisions that they've made. I think he'd just be the perfect second line center. Bob is on his last year of his contract. He's 36, I think. And they traded Spencer Knight away, so they don't really have a goalie in the wings, I don't think. Jacob Fowler is from Florida. And obviously the Habs have other, you know, Owen Beck and guys that can maybe step into the Florida lineup as depth players in the NHL at a minimum cost. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, Beck, Fowler, and a first round pick and another pick to get Anton Lindell. I don't think it'll ever happen because they have him signed for, I think it's $5 million a year for the next couple of years. So it's a tough ask, but he would be one of my dream targets. He's an absolute animal. Him and Lusterinen. Unless they think Lusterinen, I think he was drafted as a center. They put him on the wing, so maybe they get him as a third line center, you know, to recoup some losses to stay competitive because they don't want to fall into the Tampa Bay Lightning trap of just having a top heavy team, right?
That's an interesting trade. Beck, Fowler, and a pick for Lundell. I think the Canadians would do it. I'm not so sure Florida would be willing to do it.
It would just depend on Florida's offseason.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But they're not afraid to make big, shocking moves in Florida, as we've seen.
No, they traded Huberto after he scored 300 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Kachuk, who doesn't score near as much, but that worked out pretty good.
Yeah, unfortunately.
That might be where the Habs go in 3 years from now, right? They say when we kept getting kicked out of the playoffs, we might have to trade Cole Caulfield for some size. You know, kind of like when they, you know, Huberto, you hate to see him go, trade him for Kachuk. I mean, just spitballing, right? But it takes those bold moves to become a cup champion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Calgary,
Nazim,
there's a rumor that Kadri might be available.
Would love.
Oh yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, he's a dog as well. Absolute dog.
I don't know if they're rebuilding because they were so close to the playoffs and they're a young team. But I mean, yeah, for sure. Perfect second line center. And he was a Habs fan growing up.
His dad would be thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing though, is they don't have a lot of depth at center. I'm pretty sure they were already talking about some of the mock drafts I was looking at as the Calgary wants to get a center in this draft. So
they can have Doc and Newhook. Those are two centers they can have.
Yeah, Doc and Newhook straight up for Kadri, done. Yeah.
Two for one. It's perfect.
Oh. Craig Conroy's done some pretty dodgy trades in my opinion, but probably wouldn't bite on that.
We'll give Calgary their pick back in the first round this year. There you go. Now Calgary get three picks in the first round. Giddy up.
Oh, that's almost as bad as the TVA journalist who loaded the trade proposal of Habs trading both of their first rounders to Nashville for Marchessault and Nashville's number 5 overall. And I thought to myself, who in their right mind would do that?
Ryan O'Reilly would be another great get.
That's true.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It fit more of an immediate need, too, as a good 2C that would, you know, work his ass off. You know, he would fit in well. We've talked about Ryan O'Reilly a lot. I don't know.
And cover for those two wingers, too.
Yeah.
I think the main thing, Gorton and Hughes, other than signing Hudson this summer, is they can't let Demidov center to start the year next year be new Hooker Doc, right? They can't. You're not setting this kid up for success by putting him with one of those two guys. You're not.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe they go really bold and go for Elias Pettersson.
No.
That's a little bit too bold for me.
Yeah, that's a lot of salary.
He was a 100-point player 2 years ago.
Yeah, I don't like him.
I think it'd be easier to get William. It'd be easier to get William Karlsson. We won't get you the points, but would fit a 2C better.
Of course, I'd rather Pettersson to Doc, but no, not a bad cap hit. No.
There's not a lot of options out there.
No, that's the problem.
Pavel Zacha from Boston could be a stopgap. Big guy. I don't know. He doesn't excite me. Barrett Hayton. I don't know if Utah love him because he was the previous. I don't know if it's. Is this still the same regime that's like management in Utah as it was in Arizona?
Still the same.
I'm not sure if that's
the same group that drafted Hayton.
Was it not that nerd that got in trouble for all the dodgy combine stuff?
John Chayka?
Yeah, I don't know anymore.
Maybe.
There's just not a lot of inspiring names.
Well, not Hayton. At all. There's a lot of teams looking for center help, so it'll be interesting to see what they come up with.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see the Maple Leafs, you know, give Bennett like $11 million a year and then still be stuck with a top-heavy team that can't get past the first round.
John Tavares, maybe he'll come.
It happen.
Maybe he'll come now.
I'd be scared if the Leafs got Todd Bennett. That would scare me. I would not like that.
Yeah. That's been rumored for a while, though. But, yeah, it's all going to depend on what Florida does.
Are they transplanting his heart into Matthews? That would
be yeah, that would be a scary player.
Well, Matthews does like going to Germany for strange surgery, so maybe that's what you're going to be doing in the offseason.
A little bit more than a hair transplant this time.
Okay, guys. Well, on that note, let's wrap it up. Thank you very much for joining.
Thanks, Gov. That was a lot of fun.
Thanks,
Thor. Go Habs, go.
Go Habs, go. Should we say go Horton? Horton and Hughes? No, Gorton and Hughes.
There we go. I thought you were cheering for Nathan Horton. Did he ring
the bell? No.